If you feel as though you're waiting and waiting and waiting to retire, unfortunately, you're not alone. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. And just ahead on the show this morning, why so many American women are aging into poverty, and what are the solutions? We want to hear from you about your fears about money in retirement. Give us a call right now. It's 549-2937. Then later, cultivating green spirits in Jacksonville. That's in our Going Green today. Plus, how you can peek inside a tiny house this weekend on a much-loved home tour. All of that ahead this morning. But first, this hour, a new report says Social Security is in trouble. Fund reserves are scheduled to become depleted by the year 2035, unless there's a fix. That's not good news, especially for women in this country who face serious financial challenges in retirement. Now, the author of groundbreaking research on the American workforce, especially economic issues facing women, is speaking in Jacksonville this week. Tomorrow night, the Mayor's Commission on the Status of Women is hosting Dr. Mary Gatta of City University of New York. She'll take us inside her latest publication. It's called Waiting on Retirement: Aging and Economic Insecurity in Low-Wage Work. Now, this is a topic of interest to so many of you out there, so listen up, because Dr. Mary Gatta is here in studio with a preview right now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. And what are your concerns about retirement? We want to hear from men, too. Are you worried about having enough to live on? Are you worried about aging into poverty? Give us a call. It's 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaNJax, and our Facebook page is open to your comments, too. So, Dr. Gatta, you got a grant to study women actually aging into poverty in St. John's and Duval counties. You're looking at this both at the national level and the local level. I guess in a minute I want to ask you about what you're learning in our local county situation. But first, as you look at this in the big picture, women aging into poverty is a headline that I think strikes fear into the hearts of millions and millions of American women because they are very much afraid that's going to happen to them. What are the factors driving this?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. So one thing we know nationally and, you know, here in Florida is that there are higher percentages of women who are older, retiring, and retiring into poverty. That means they are not economically secure when they can no longer work. Mm-hmm. There are many factors that are contributing to this. One significant factor is that the gender pay gap, for example. So during a woman's life, she's earning less in her working years. Well, that compounds and amplifies in her retirement. So that means she's paying less into Social Security. She's paying less into any type of savings or 401k program she has. So the gap during the working years gets larger during your retirement. You simply have less money in retirement because you made less money mm-hmm. just because you're a woman. Mm-hmm. So that's a factor. Women are also tend to be the primary caregivers in their family. So they are taking time out of the labor market to care for children or an elderly parent or a spouse. And when that happens, they are not earning money that they cannot save and they are not paying into their Social Security. So that's another significant factor. And women also tend to be in jobs that don't offer 401ks. So when we think about some of the leading kind of traditionally female jobs, those jobs tend to be ones that don't offer robust employment benefits like a employer matched 401k. So often the women are going into retirement if they don't have money from a male partner, going into retirement with just their Social Security, which is already at a lower level than what men's are.
Right. So millions of Americans, especially women, who will be retiring in the coming years with no real savings, just a Social Security check, are obviously upset to learn that the fund could be depleted by the year 2035 unless the government fixes the problem. And so that is a timely headline for your talk as you look at this. Now, obviously, there are men aging into poverty, too. But as your research shows, for women, it's especially critical that women find ways to save and invest for retirement because they face special challenges.
Absolutely. So not only are women earning less, as we mentioned, but women also depend on that less Social Security at a higher percentage than men. So it's like a double whammy, right? So they're paying less in, but because they don't have that additional savings, they're actually depending on that less money as more of their income in retirement. So it's really a recipe for disaster.
And are we seeing this disaster kind of unfolding in slow motion? Because, you know, people forget that Social Security was created because senior citizens were literally dying in the streets. It was a dire, dire situation for elderly people in this country. It's not in our faces today. It's sort of a quiet epidemic, isn't it?
It is. Right now, when we look at the data, about half of all seniors, citizens in the U.S. live in economic insecurity. But that number is projected to grow, and that's because our labor market has changed. So are the jobs that folks are in who are in their 40s and 50s right now don't offer defined pension plans, for example. So they don't offer those robust employment benefits. So what we're seeing now is a crisis, but unless we really talk about addressing this issue, it could get worse as people who are undersaved individually in their 30s and 40s and 50s now begin to approach retirement.
What do you see as the policy solutions for addressing this crisis?
So I think there are a number of policy solutions that we can talk about. First, I think it's important to understand what happens to you in retirement is directly correlated to what happens to you in the labor market. So we need to address factors like gender and racial pay gaps, right? So if you're earning less in when you're working, you're going to have less when you retire. So we need to talk about ending discrimination in the labor market. We need to talk about understanding ways of ensuring that people can save even in jobs that are, like, think about our growing kind of gig economy with Uber drivers, all of these independent contractors. How do we actually help develop savings vehicles mm-hmm. during their working years? So we need to address what's going on in the labor market. We then also need to secure retirement, in essence, right? We need to ensure that Social Security is solvent, right? So we need to talk about ensuring that in 2035, it can pay out its full benefits and not a portion of those benefits.
And give me an example. In the year 2035, I want to draw Social Security. Under the current projections, I will not be able to draw a check anywhere close to the amount my parents or grandparents drew, adjusted for inflation.
It
would be significantly less.
Yes, it will be. If we do not make change, it would be less, than what you would be expecting. Absolutely. If we do not address and ensure it's solvent. And we also, in terms of women.
And let me just jump in. How do we make Social Security solvent, do you think?
So there are a couple things. One thing that has been talked about, of course, is removing the payroll tax cap. Right. So that wealthier people right now, it's capped, I think, at about $130,000 income. If we remove that cap, then that income, those taxes would come in and help address Social Security. Right. So we need to talk about really understanding and reforming those insurance systems. The other thing we need to do, and this particularly impacts women, is we need to talk about a caregiver credit in Social Security. So when women take time out of the labor market to care for family, they're not being paid or not paying into Social Security. So we need to talk about a credit so women don't lose that time, because mm-hmm. that is a big factor as to why women are getting less in Social Security. Mm-hmm. So we need to really shore up our retirement savings programs. The other thing that in my research has showed is we need to help increase the opportunities for saving for people. Many states are beginning to talk about kind of a savings program, like a secure choice savings program, so that when you're working, you're not just paying into Social Security, a portion of your income is also going into a retirement savings program. And there've been several iterations of this legislation, even nationally, like how do we help individuals save for retirement? Because in and of itself, Social Security will not be enough, right? People do need savings. So we need to provide savings opportunities, particularly for workers that do not have jobs that offer 401ks. And the last thing we have to do is we have to address healthcare. In my research, one of the biggest concerns people had was, okay, I can work, but then something happens to me in my health and I cannot work any longer. And we know that the projections even with having health Medicare, people need hundreds of thousands of dollars to be able to support their health insurance, health needs, and then particularly as those needs get worse in their life.
So that's a really good picture at a really good look at the big picture in this country. You also did some research here in Northeast Florida comparing St. John's and Duval counties. What did you find?
So here in Florida, we know I did some research with the American Association of University Women last year in Jacksonville and St. Augustine. And one thing that we can see is that many Floridians, older Floridians, are living in economic insecurity. Over 40% of all Florida retired households are economically insecure. That means they don't have enough income coming in to cover basic needs, housing, healthcare, food, taxes. Women, though, a greater percentage of women are economically insecure here in the state than men. So just to put this in perspective, for women's own income in the state, using just her income, 67% of all Florida women are economically insecure.
67%. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a high divorce rate, too. That is a factor in women aging into poverty.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because single women are in greater poverty than coupled women, than partnered women, or men. And also women outlive men. So the irony is you need more money because your life expectancy is going to be higher, but all of these factors are impacting it.
It's a perfect storm of poverty. It's terrifying, Mary.
It really
I have to tell you, it's very worrisome. But let's try to be positive as we talk about solutions and your calls here on the show this morning with Dr. Mary Gatta of City University of New York, speaking tomorrow night at Jacksonville City Hall via the Mayor's Commission on the Status of Women. The topic is waiting on retirement and women aging into poverty. What are your thoughts and questions as we talk about retirement savings, Social Security, and more? So far, all of our callers are men, by the way, which just shows you that men are worried about this too.
Absolutely.
But let's go to your calls. It's 549-2937. Joel is in Volusia County. Hey, Joel, good morning.
Good morning. I don't know if I've got my radio turned down.
No, you sound good.
Okay. I just wanted to comment. I have a question, but I wanted to comment, too, that I really, regardless of statistics, I'm very sure that having enough money to live throughout your lifespan is a concern that really is concerns men and women equally. But my question is, what are suggestions to do with the tax code? We need to pay taxes or we're not going to have Social Security. At the same time, this administration took away the small business personal tax exemption for business expenses. And I know that caused my taxes to go up to a level that were just 40% under what I paid at the height of my business career because of the tax code.
Uh-huh.
So my question is, what does the lady have for suggestions there? Because working hard in your own business is a way to equalize all platforms.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Joel, for that question. Mary?
Yeah, so absolutely. I agree with what Joel said, that it is a concern across the lifespan when you're working, when you're retired, and for men and women. And we do need to talk about actually talking about equitable tax codes that can help ensure that not only that small businesses are able to thrive, but also that we are able to ensure that Joel and his workers will one day be able to retire because the programs are secure that can help support that. So we do need to talk about reforming our tax code, and we do need to do that in a way that eliminating the payroll tax cap at those highest incomes is one way to begin to talk about that.
And that has been brought up again and again for years when you talk about Social Security. The political will to do it just hasn't coalesced yet, has it?
Yeah, and that's really important. And the political will is really critical here. And we also need to kind of understand that when folks are aging into poverty or living and working and in poverty, that's a social contract breach, right? That everybody that I talked to in my book and in the research here in North Florida had worked, right? They kind of did all the right stuff. But when they came to a point where they could no longer work, because many folks were retired by circumstance, not necessarily by choice.
As companies push out older workers in particular. Oftentimes, people don't want to retire. They enjoy working. They might be pushed out due to age discrimination, downsizing.
Exactly.
All of that.
Yeah. Age discrimination is a really critical factor we need to talk about in our labor market. And that is particularly when folks are pushed out, say, in the late 50s, early 60s. That really impacts the amount of retirement savings they're going to have.
Bala is in Mandarin. Bala, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I have a question. Like, this is not basically with women or men or anything, because basically myself, I'm talking for my wife and myself. So I'm an immigrant, and I'm in this country for the past 14 years, and I've been contributing to Social Security and Medicare, and still I'm not a permanent resident. So I'm not sure that at any point of time, if I go out of this country, what will happen to all the Social Security I have amassed in the past 14 to 15 years in this country? So what will happen to that, all that amount?
Yeah, sure.
Especially with the 2035 depletion, what you're talking about. I'm not scared of my retirement, but the thing is, like, whatever money I have contributed should be put to good use to myself or to my family.
Thank you for that question.
My kids are U.S. citizens, and they stay here. And if the money goes to them at any point of time in any form, that would be of help to me and my family, too.
Of course. Well, yeah, that's an interesting question, too. Thank you for that, Bala.
Yeah, right. So folks, many folks who are paying into Social Security, you know, the concern of, you know, if you leave not being able to draw on that fund. And I think that gets back to really the social contract of it all, right? When we pay into Medicare or Social Security, thinking that it will be there for future generations is important.
And he can't count on that as someone who isn't a naturalized citizen.
Exactly. He can. He will. He
even
can
though
pay
he's
in.
Paying into the system.
Yeah.
So that's another unfairness, really, that is part of this whole conversation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unfortunately. And so I appreciate you making our callers aware of that too, Bala. There are a lot of tentacles to this. Hilda is on the west side. Hilda, good morning. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I was a caregiver, and I actually am still a caregiver, for my mom who had a massive stroke, and I took care of her for 6 years. And I attended a lot of the Caregiver Coalition seminars, which is very helpful. You know, there's a lot of information. And I found out at that time that I could be paid to take care of my mother. And I didn't want to take too much money because I knew that she was incapacitated and she was paralyzed, that she was, you know, she was going to decline. And we needed as much money as we could to take care of her. Mm-hmm. And so I just took the money enough to cover the Social Security, to pay into Social Security to try to stay active, you know, in Social Security in case I became disabled. So a lot of caregivers don't know that. I just figured out, okay, how much do I need to have, you know, to cover that, to pay into Social Security to keep myself active.
Yeah.
And so I did. Also, there's an organization called Aging True.
Sure.
And they helped me as well, and they went by my mother's income. And I got home health aides and certified nursing assistants that came to my house, to my mom's house, because eventually what we did, my dad declined. So I told my husband, we're just going to bring my mom back to her house, and we're just going to take care of both of them in the same home.
Yeah, that sounds like a smart way to go. And Hilda, you're right. Aging True is a wonderful organization that can help so many people dealing with these issues. And I'm glad they were able to help you, Hilda. And thank you so much for sharing your family's story, Mary.
Yeah, I think Hilda's story is very common when she's now taking time out to care for her mom. And the importance that she also talks about is education and awareness, right? So she connected with a caregivers coalition here that was able to help give her some resources and access. And those support networks are really, really important. But often it's folks having to go find those out. Like, we really do need to talk about how do we support caregivers both economically and also emotionally. Right. And then when Hilda does return to the labor market after a period of time out, how do we help her, you know, talk about her transferable skills and understand how she can frame that in order to reenter the labor market? Because then that break in her labor history can also be an impact as she tries to go back to work. So it's really important to kind of look at it from all those perspectives.
Emails, tweets, Facebook comments. Here's a tweet from Dan. I've been dealing with this with my mom. Social Security is her only lifeline. Calling my shot. Boomers are going to drain the system and then blame millennials for not getting enough good jobs to pay back into it. Here's an email from Catherine. I am ready to retire age-wise, but I can't afford to. Even though we work hard, it feels like an uphill climb. Never enough. I say I am on the work till you die plan, and I even have some savings.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have some stories in my book that I'll talk about tomorrow night at the talk from the Mayor's Commission, where many folks' retirement plan is just to work until you drop. And that is, and not only is that problematic on so many levels, it's not realistic. The idea of working longer is a good thing. People enjoy work and people should be able to work longer, but we need to put those mechanisms in place to allow people to do that.
Getting questions about Social Security too. Susan writes on Facebook, why can't everyone be part of Social Security? Why are government workers able to opt out? Here's another tweet from Paula. She says, haven't they been raiding the Social Security fund? ever since the Nixon administration, that's been going on. Yeah.
So we really need to, I mean, one of the things that I think is really important is that this impacts across people. As you notice, men are calling in, it impacts women, it impacts generations. So one of the things that's really important is to share these stories with your local representatives. Being able to say, I'm working, I have savings, but I cannot retire. And I've worked my entire life. It's very powerful. Because it violates the American dream, right? The whole idea of the American dream is you work hard, you get ahead, and you'll have this wonderful retirement looking forward. And for decades that happened. But what we saw from kind of the 80s moving forward is the depletion of that and the continued weakening of the social safety net.
Emma is on the South Side. Emma, thanks for holding. Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi. Yes. I am 18, so I'm looking pretty far into the future here, but I've already started a savings plan.
Good for you. Oh, you're so smart. I'm so proud of you. I wish I had been as smart as you when I was your age.
Well, thank you. But I'm just wondering if all of this is happening, you know, now, and I'll only be 35, you know, with this prediction, what is going to happen after that? The next generation.
Right. What's coming up for your generation, Emma? Yes. Thank you for that. Yeah. People of our generation are worried, but so are younger
people. Absolutely. Younger people are very worried. I think about my students, for example, and they are worried about their futures. And one thing that I think if we're able to really talk about real reform for Social Security, it's not just for the generation coming up. It's for the millennials and the Gen Xers, too, coming up. We need to talk about securing retirement and securing work across generations. So certainly starting a savings program, being able to do that at 18 for your future is really wonderful. And unfortunately, I think a little rare.
Right. Emma, if you're still listening, it's everyone your age should follow your lead. It's never too early to start saving for retirement. That said, she kind of wanted to know, what kind of benefits can I expect when I'm retirement age? And we just don't have a specific answer to that question. And, you know, Mary, I honestly think, you know, we'll hear a lot about these issues in the upcoming presidential race and beyond. But with the stalemate over this that's been going on for decades now, the cynic in me thinks it will be Emma's generation that will be the one that really fully addresses this slow-moving crisis, because it hasn't reached enough of a crisis pain point yet to force political change.
Yeah, and that's not a sustainable way to have a society.
Yeah.
And that's what's really incredibly frustrating. And that's where it's also, I think, important to draw coalitions across ages and across generations, that students now who are 18 and 19 are worried just like folks in their 60s and 50s. And that really is, you know, there's strength in numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. Sherry is in Arlington. Hi, Sherry. What's your story? Good morning.
Hi. I've worked my entire life. I babysat. I started working for other people when I was 15 years old. It's then I ended up getting married young and pregnant, and my daughter was born with some pretty severe heart problems. So I could not work. I had to take care of her, and the stresses of that led to divorce. So,
oh, I think we lost your call, Sherry. But she was forced to go on disability. Like so many people we're hearing from, she's worked all her life and is frustrated. And so this is not an uncommon tale.
No, it's not. And it crosses one of the things I focused on in my book were some more of the more vulnerable workers. But the reality is that this crosses workers who would consider themselves middle class, right? An upper middle class, because the working your entire life, as Sherry did and as so many of the folks who have called in has done, you know, really does not guarantee for them the financial security that they thought it would. And we're seeing it now, Ellie, with this current generation. But as we've talked about, unless we begin to do something, it will just escalate.
And I'm getting corrected by listeners pointing out that it was LBJ, not Nixon, that first blended Social Security taxes into the general funding of the government. And thank you for that. What I meant by that mainly was in the modern era, this has been something all administrations have done from time to time.
Right.
So thanks for we have very smart listeners out there. Dixie is in Orange Park. Hi, Dixie. How are you this morning?
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm good. Aging out women, I think that culturally we had some expectations that we would be taken care of by men. I know it sounds very medieval, but I think in the background, every woman my age can admit that she felt that way coming up. And, you know, I managed to escape that, and I've saved enough money to live comfortably, but I have two siblings who didn't, and they're often dependent on me.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, Dixie, I appreciate you talking about that, because that is something that's a factor in this too. Thank you, Dixie, for that call.
That was
women were raised with a set of expectations that really don't exist so much anymore, but that's more baggage. That's another drag on their ability to save the way that the culture in this country used to be. And still is for some people.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things in my research here in North Florida, I conducted focus groups in Jacksonville and in St. Augustine with older women. And that was a theme that came up. Not only did they expect that they'd be taken care of, but they didn't have the knowledge of what their finances in their household were. So when their husband, when they were divorced, or if their husband passed away, they often then found they didn't have what they thought they had. And that was not only a shock to them, but it was also then the first time that they had to begin to understand how to manage all of this. So financial planning for girls at a young age, and boys too, but just financial planning for girls and women, particularly as they age, is really important. Because you're not going to, you know, divorce and death happen. And often if you don't know what's there, it's really problematic.
Yeah. The bottom line is get savvy about your money, ladies. You can't depend on someone else to manage it for you. Don't fall into that trap. Here's a tweet from a listener. It sounds like the government has been robbing Peter to pay Paul. How will the government pay Mary? And Mary Gatta, this is a preview of how you're going to address these issues at a special talk at Jacksonville City Hall. Tomorrow night, the Mayor's Commission on the Status of Women is hosting you as you talk about aging and economic insecurity. This is open to the public.
Absolutely. Right? Yes. Please come. And, you know, we would love to be able to continue this conversation. I'll share some of the stories of the folks. And also, I think coming together to talk about these issues and also to talk about how to address them, both in our lives and at a policy level, is really important.
And we have Sherry back on the line. Her call was cut off. Let's try to finish her call. Sherry, are you there?
I'm here.
Go ahead, Sherry.
I'm here. Well, I don't know where I got to in my story, but basically, baby boomer, worked my whole life, started working 15 years old, had a child with heart condition, ended up divorced because of the strains of that, and I've had to raise my child, able to go back to college in my late 30s, and it wasn't until I was in my 40s that I was earning a decent wage as a therapist, But in 2004, a semi-truck ran a red light and hit me.
Oh.
And I continued trying to work for years after. But because I have a spinal cord injury and a head injury now, I was unable to continue. I was forced to go on Social Security disability. And it took me 10 years to even get that. Because I was in my 40s, they couldn't believe someone was disabled in their 40s, I guess. Anyway, I now live with my daughter and son-in-law and their two children in a too small house.
Mm-hmm.
I have never and probably will never have a home of my own. I do not have enough money, income, Social Security. I get $1,700 a month. And it's not enough to live on. It's not enough to get out of their home and let them have a family life and let me have a home. I'm kind of wondering, is there any advice or policy changes or whatever for people in my situation?
Sure. And I'm so sorry, Sherry. Yeah, I'm so sorry. And I'm glad you were able to call back and finish your story. I would also recommend, if you haven't already, to call Aging True in Jacksonville. They have a lot of services available for women and men that are dealing with your set of challenges. Aging True, give them a call, Sherry, and thank you for your call. Mary, any advice for Sherry?
Yeah, I mean, I think Sherry's story kind of captures a lot of what we're talking about. She's someone who kind of did all the right stuff, went to school, worked, and then life happens. Her child was ill, she found herself divorced, she herself was hurt. I think her story, she needs to also, in addition to reaching out to local organizations, as you suggest, I think also reaching out to her local representatives, putting a face on, this is the reality. I'm working, I'm trying, but I am now having to live with my kids, my adult kids. Have them understand your situation because you can be an advocate. For other folks. And you're absolutely right. The median value of Social Security is not enough to be economically secure. So it is really I'm very touched by her story.
I am too. And I'm not at all surprised that we received so much feedback about this topic from women and men. Thank you for everybody who shared your stories with us. Go see Dr. Mary Gatta of City University of New York, an author and researcher, speaking tomorrow night at Jacksonville City Hall, a free presentation on aging into poverty. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having me.
And much more still ahead. Later in the hour, special surprises this year at the Riverside Avondale Tour of Homes. But up next, cultivating green spirits in the city. That's in our Going Green after this. I'm Melissa Ross.
And I'm Tom Hudson. Join us Friday for the Florida Roundup, where we talk about the biggest stories in the state.
From politics to education, the environment, and more. If it's news in Florida, we want to hear from you.
Let your voice be heard. Join the conversation on the Florida Roundup.
Fridays at noon on WJCT.
Hi, it's Robin Young, co-host of Here and Now, Public Radio's live midday news program, now on 89.9 FM WJCT. Join me and Jeremy Hobson beginning Monday, April 29th at 1 p.m. to hear news as it's happening. Timely, in-depth news, interviews, and conversation.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, we hear how Spotify, an alleged disruptor of the music industry, has in some ways become the music industry.
So in a weird way, while we want to democratize music, we've kind of become gatekeepers as well.
And how valuable is Spotify really?
People always said, oh, Spotify is so amazing. And my response was always, well, it's not saving lives.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
Sunday at 1 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
This Going Green segment is made possible by A1A Solar.
Welcome back. Well, it's a brand new initiative designed to highlight protecting, preserving, and renewing this community's natural resources and the way we can all help in creating environmentally friendly neighborhoods. Green Spirits is the focus of our Going Green today on the show. Its creator is Joanne Trednick. She is a member of St. John's Cathedral and a board member of Groundwork Jacksonville. And she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being with us. And I should point out, in the spirit of full disclosure, you're my neighbor, too.
Yes.
So it's exciting to have you on the show. So what inspired you to create Green Spirits?
Well, several things did. First of all, I've been active in environmental causes since I was a teenager, so this is not a new activity for me. And several years ago, when I was visiting my relatives in England, I realized that the Church of England, and as Episcopalians, we are related to the Church of England, has a very active environmental program in terms of how people think about the earth and what is the faith community's relationship to that. Mm-hmm. So that was an inspiration. And then, of course, our own St. John's Cathedral is taking on initiatives in this area.
Okay, so lots of threads to this. What is Green Spirits and what is it going to do?
Well, Green Spirits is just getting started. So our kickoff meeting is this Saturday. That's Saturday, April 27th. At St. John's Cathedral, and we're going to have the group actually have a lot of input into exactly what we'll do as a Green Spirits. But certainly our objective is to educate ourselves, to reach out to the community, to have this be part of St. John's Cathedral's community engagement and being part of our neighborhood in the cathedral district.
This is going to include a walking tour of the downtown cathedral district and a sneak peek of what you and your husband, who are big historic preservationists, are working on, redeveloping the old YMCA and a project in the city called Elena Flats. Can
yes.
you tell us about that?
Yes. Part of a healthy environment is a healthy neighborhood. And St. John's Cathedral is has taken a leadership position in revitalizing and restoring the cathedral district, our neighborhood, where our cathedral is the center of that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we're going this weekend, we're going to take a walking tour through a part of the cathedral district. We'll look at a project that the cathedral is working on and also our a historic apartment building, which is Elena Flats, located at 122 East Duval Street. This building was at risk of demolition.
And it's a pretty old building.
It's an old building, circa 1909. Mm-hmm. And my husband, Jack, and I just could not bear to see another historic building come and go down in downtown and get demolished and turn into a surface parking lot.
Right.
So we chose to save that building. And now, as the cathedral district is restoring, we're realizing that this project is also a catalyst in that effort.
People will learn about that. And also, there will be just some discussion on what people can do in their own neighborhoods to become more environmentally aware, particularly reducing the use of single-use plastics and some other stuff. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So an interesting Lenten discipline that the members of our church were encouraged to take on this year is a plastic fast.
And nice.
Yes. That's a plastic fast.
Yeah.
Don't worry about
giving up plastic for Lent.
Right. Giving up plastic.
And there are some very simple things that we can all do to reduce our use of one-time use plastics, such as plastic water bottles. Have a reusable water bottle. Don't buy bottled water in plastic. Refuse straws. Don't use plastic straws. Have reusable shopping bags. Mm-hmm. There are many very simple and easy changes we can make in our lives to affect that.
Those are all easy steps, baby steps can take.
Yes,
absolutely. Now, this is coming up this Saturday at St. John's Cathedral, free event, 9 a.m. And by the way, if you're interested in the theme of Green Spirits, great. But at the same time, you will also, if you've never been downtown to St. John's Cathedral, you will also be in for a treat there because it's really one of the most architecturally significant and beautiful structures in anywhere in Jacksonville. It's just a gem.
Yes, that is true. And an added benefit that participants will be able to see this week is we have a beautiful new art exhibit called Canopies, which are this artist's interpretation of tree canopies in Jacksonville and how they influenced her life as a childhood and her view of the world. So we have a fantastic art exhibit, too.
Wow. So it's the first ever Green Spirits this Saturday morning at St. John's Cathedral. And it's your hope that this becomes a regular thing.
Yes.
This will be something you're hoping to grow and expand throughout the city.
Yes. Yes. This will be, hopefully, our objective is this is part of the cathedral's participation in community life in the urban core. And that we, like medieval cathedrals, will be a center of community life in the Cathedral District neighborhood.
That is really exciting to hear. And the Cathedral District, of course, this walking tour, if you've never been downtown or checked out these old churches, this is going to be just a really beautiful way to learn more about the city's architectural history through its faith centers in this cathedral district. It's always been there. It's just newly been christened the Cathedral District, which is kind of cool. And this is the kickoff for Green Spirits. It's free. It's this Saturday at 9 a.m. at St. John's Cathedral in downtown Jacksonville. And Joanne Trednick is one of the creators of this new initiative and also a board member of Groundwork Jacksonville. So Joanne, thanks so much for joining us and keep us posted.
Thank you, Melissa. We appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you so much.
And up next, a tiny house will be a special attraction this weekend in Riverside Avondale. How you can peek inside, that's after this. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. We'll be right back.
JCT and PNC Grow Up Great to celebrate Be My Neighbor Day, Saturday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the WJCT Studios. Meet Daniel Tiger, Katarina Kitty Cat, and their friends. Tour TIAA Bank Field, meet community helpers, face painters, enjoy local food trucks, arts and crafts, and so much more. Reserve your spot today for this free, family-friendly community event by visiting WJCT.org. Start something good in your neighborhood.
One program to get people off the streets in Los Angeles is called Rapid Rehousing.
It's grand to finally have something that I could call mine and I could come home every night, lock my door, just know that I'm safe.
People in the program are expected to eventually take over the rent in one of the most expensive cities in America. I'm Ari Shapiro. The struggle to stay housed this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, psychiatry's search to understand the biological basis of mental illness. We talk with Harvard professor Ann Harrington about her new book, Mind Fixers, about how that search led to new classes of drugs. But she says pharmaceutical companies are leaving the psychiatric field, and we're at a turning point in how we treat mental illness. Join us today at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
If you're in the mood for love, you're in the mood for Maxwell. The Grammy Award-winning singer has been making music for decades, fusing the legendary sounds of soul with contemporary R&B. Now he's re-releasing some of his rare recordings and reflecting on his career. Maxwell, remixed, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Light the fire, you place the flowers in the vase that you bought today.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's your chance to peek inside some of this area's most beautiful and beautifully preserved historic homes. The 45th annual Riverside Avondale Preservation Home Tour is coming up this Saturday and Sunday, rain or shine. And this year, one of the homes on the tour is a tiny house. If you've never been inside one, you really don't want to miss this. We're excited to welcome Kyle Williams, chair of the Riverside Avondale Preservation Home Tour Committee. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
And Beth McGovern. She owns the tiny house that's featured on this tour. Hey, Beth.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
And in a moment, I'm going to ask Beth about the tiny house. But first, Kyle, this is the 45th annual home tour in Riverside Avondale, which is a spring tradition in this community. I've been many times and looking forward to going again this weekend. This is just an incredible treat for anyone that's driven through the neighborhood and seen all these beautiful homes and wondered, I wonder what they're like inside. You get the chance to look, which is exciting.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things that I think draws people in is, you know, a lot of people will come and entertain in the neighborhood. And, you know, you drive these historic streets that are, you know, beautifully tree lined and what have you, and have a lot of Jacksonville history behind those doors. So, you know, we each year have a weekend where you can come out and peek behind those doors and see how people used to live and how people actually live today in these old homes.
And 11 homes on the tour, including your home, Beth. It's a tiny house. How tiny is the house?
477 square feet.
Oh, man. And do you live by yourself there or with someone else?
With a really large dog.
So tell me about how this house came to be and why you decided to put it on the tour.
So it's actually a mystery behind the house. You know, when the city combined with the county, we lost a lot of public records. And so as far as I know, my house was moved to its current site by 1931, but it could have been army barracks or a schoolhouse or anything beforehand.
Why do you think tiny houses have just grown so much in appeal? People really have become, it's a worldwide movement.
I think that people are actually getting away from consumerism. You know, we get kind of owned by our stuff. Mm-hmm. After a while. And me personally, I lived in a smaller apartment in a big city. And when I moved back to Jacksonville to a much bigger place, I was like, I don't really want the furniture to fill this back up. Mm. And then I found my house.
And you love it.
I love it. It's such a wonderful little house.
I can't wait to see it. And Kyle, there will be 11 homes total on the tour. Not only is the tour happening Saturday and Sunday, tomorrow night you're having what you call a twilight party. This is sort of a preview party with a special speaker. Who's on the agenda?
So tomorrow evening, we have a kickoff party to the home tour weekend, if you will, on Richmond Street. It's a home that is not featured on the tour. And we are lucky enough to have Jim Delgado come and speak. He is a maritime archaeologist, is very well known If you look him up on Wikipedia, you will see his numerous accomplishments, and along with his wife as well. But Jim will be speaking tomorrow about historic preservation and his, you know, what he's had to do, you know, with that and in his career. So I think, you know, we can definitely look at having a good time with that.
Okay, so tickets are still available. If you go to wraphometour.com, you can get your tickets now for the weekend tour of homes in historic Riverside Avondale. wraphometour.com, rain or shine on Saturday and Sunday. And get those walking shoes ready, right? People are going to be... I usually walk and drive to try to see all of the homes because it's a big neighborhood.
Yeah, the way the houses are laid out this year, you know, it's pretty walkable. A lot of people also do it by bike. We have a bike tour that kicks off on Saturday and Sunday as well. And, you know, it's definitely a great way to see the neighborhood and truly kind of just take a step back in time.
And Beth, in particular, I think there will be a lot of interest in the tiny house. So thank you for sharing a little bit about that with us. It's exciting.
Yeah, you're quite welcome. And everybody, please come out.
Again, it's wraphometour.com. Maybe I'll see you out there at the 45th annual Spring Tour of Homes in Riverside Avondale. Kyle Williams with the Wrap Home Tour Committee and tiny house owner Beth McGovern. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
See you this weekend.
See ya.
All right, that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And you are a big part of the show with your calls and your feedback. Send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org with all of your questions and comments. On tomorrow's show, we speak with Jacksonville City Councilman Matt Carlucci on just what to do about the Jacksonville Landing. Should the public have more of a say? That's coming up tomorrow. 1A is up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. If you're listening to our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock, just keep listening for the Electro Lounge. We'll see you on the flip side.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.